Good day, and welcome back to the Iowa Blog. I am your host, Craig Wynn. This series of programs being live streamed here on January 2nd, 2025, is to accomplish three things. First, I want the world to know that the United States FBI deliberately covered over evidence that demonstrated the motivation of the New Orleans Islamic terrorist, Jabbar, who used a rented pickup truck to snuff out 15 lives on New Year's Day on Bourbon Street. I want you to know the truth about the religion of Islam and its jihadist nature so that you're not misled by the FBI and government authorities. I also want Israel to know, because I think it is essential that Israel recognize that they cannot prevail by lashing out against a symptom of jihad and a symptom of Islam. Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, even the Iranians, the Houthis, are simply a symptom of Islam, not the cause, not the reason that Muslims perpetrated such heinous acts against Jews. And third, this day, the United Kingdom announced that it would not preclude the gangs of Muslims and progressives trying to terrorize Britain and most of Europe into submission by promising an international jihad against the UK, against Europe, against America, because they say that jihad has several meanings. It's not true. Jihad is defined in the Quran as fighting in Allah's cause. There is no other definition. And I proved it in the last program, and I will continue to talk about it because it is essential for you to know. As we return to the Hadith, we find that Hamza, who was a huntsman in Petra before he became a Muslim, he is now a Mujahid. He is a Muslim warrior in jihad. It did not take much Islam or much time to turn a good man into a bad man. A man who hunted for food into a man who hunted people for his religion. It begins Mujahid, a Muslim warrior in jihad, Tabari 7:10. In Ramadan, 7 months after the Hijra, Muhammad entrusted a white war banner to Hamza, the command of 30 immigrants. Their aim was to intercept a Quraysh caravan. You see, there was a status system, a caste system, if you will, when Muhammad migrated out of what was Petra, Kaabaville, into Yathrib. And that is, those who came with him held much higher status than the pagans who became Muslims, who are known as the Ansar or helpers in Yathrib. They got a disproportionate share of the booty. They were treated more poorly. Now, the aim of this first Maghazi, this first jihadist raid in Islam, was to, in their words, intercept a Quraysh caravan. They were pirates, sand pirates, if you will. They were there to steal other people's property. Rather than working for a living, their goal was to steal what others had worked to achieve, and they would do it by force of arms. Not only that, this sand pirate and terrorist was willing to bludgeon and plunder his kin. He was Quraysh. So that there is no misunderstanding, let's define these less than admirable characteristics. a pirate, is a renegade who, along with others under his command, uses force of arms to steal the property of others. A terrorist is a person who violently attacks civilians, destroys their property, and disrupts their economy as a means to achieve a political or religious objective through fear. The flag Muhammad handed to Hamza was a war banner. It was one of the many symbols borrowed from his patriarch, Qusay, who is actually the inventor of every Islamic ritual. Hamza was a jihadist. He was given the command over 30 men. Their aim was to intercept and rob a caravan, a civilian economic enterprise owned by the people Muhammad had promised to slaughter because they had mocked him and teased him. And they did so only after Muhammad claimed that he had ridden a winged ass to Jerusalem and that Satan inspired his Quran surahs. The intent, of course, was piracy and terror. Their failure didn't change what they had become, what Islam had done to them. In fact, this failure was followed by the rousing success that actually established Islam, which was the bludgeoning of the next caravan intercepted by these first Muslims. It is detailed, and in fact, the entire eighth surah of the Quran is devoted to bragging about this merciless terrorist raid for the purpose, exclusive purpose, of robbing civilians and terrorizing them, their own kin. At this point in the profiteer's career, there were simply more good guys than there were bad guys, and he was as inept as a pirate as he was as a prophet. Turning to Muhammad's biographer, we learn more about the mindset of the first Muslims at this point. Ishaq, 283. Hamza's expedition to the seashore comprised 30 raiders, all immigrants from Mecca. He met Abu Jahl, who had 300 riders. Ammar intervened, for he was at peace with both sides. Hamza said, "So, they allege, wonder at the good sense and at the folly, at the lack of sound counsel and sensible advice. Their people and property are not yet violated, as we have not yet attacked. We called them to Islam, but they treat it as a joke," which was, by the way, universal among all who heard Muhammad preach, until Muhammad picked up the sword and threatened to slaughter people and began to slaughter them. Islam had no traction. There were no Muslims. Islam did not convince anyone through the recitals of the Quran. No one was convinced to be a Muslim based upon Muhammad's words. It was only when the sword was raised above their necks and cut off heads that Islam took hold. They laughed until I threatened them. At the apostle's command, I was the first to march beneath his flag, a victorious banner from Allah. Even as they sallied forth and burning with rage, Allah frustrated their schemes. No, Allah didn't do anything. Allah never did anything. Allah has never even so much as rolled over, and he is a rock. You would think he could do that. There is not a single example of Allah acting to help Muslims at any time and any way. The only things that even are credit to him is a sandstorm in the desert. Now, if you've ever lived in the desert, sandstorms are natural and they are common. And that's all that was ever claimed that Allah did. Although Allah claims to be a murderous terrorist throughout the Quran. He claims to have wiped out whole civilizations, whole communities. He claims that he was the terrorist who beheaded the Jews in Yathrib. He was the terrorist who enslaved the children. It's just not true. He motivated and inspired Muslims to do his bidding. He always has. I've always said, since so many Muslims have threatened to kill me, if you think your God is so damn hot, if you think Allahu Akbar, send Allah to get me. You think Allah has any power, any influence? Send him here. But don't prove that I'm right, that Islam is a death cult, by acting out vengeance yourself. Send your God. Abu Jahl was a merchant. He was not a militant. He responded to the Muslim terrorists and said, this is recorded in Ishaq 284. I am amazed at the causes of anger and folly, and those who stir up strife by lying controversy. They abandon our father's ways. They come with lies to twist our minds. But their lies cannot confound the wise. If you give up your raids, we will take you back. For you are our cousins, you are our kin. But they chose to believe Muhammad and became obstinately contentious. All of their deeds became evil. This is the wisest and most articulate man who knew Muhammad better than anyone then and today. Let me repeat that. This was the best informed, most articulate, and wisest man of his day that was exposed to and actually knew Muhammad, who lived with him, who heard everything he said, who knew what he had inspired in people. And his assessment of Muhammad, which is far better than anyone will ever know the man, says their lies cannot confound the wise. If you give up your raids, we will take you back, for you are our cousins and kin. But they chose to believe Muhammad and became obstinately contentious. All of their deeds became evil. Why is this not known? I've shared it for 20 years. As always, the Quraysh understood Islam. And by the way, this position, these statements against Muhammad, aren't just from the Hadith. There are 1,000 iterations of these claims in the Quran itself. 1,000 of them. Those who knew Muhammad in person, who listened to him, knew that he was a liar. They knew he was evil, and they said so, and it's recorded in the Quran. Ibn Ishaq thought, Ishaq 281, the raid on Wadan was the first Maghazi, he said. The expedition of Ubadah, Harith, was the second. The apostle sent Ubadah out on a raid with 60 or 80 riders from the immigrants. There was not a single Ansar among them. He encountered a large number of Quraysh and the Hizaz. Abu Bakr composed a poem about the raid. This is from Muhammad's earliest biographer, Ibn Ishaq. Now, some of the more memorable lines from Abu Bakr's, Muhammad's accomplice, he was also Muhammad's father-in-law. He was the father of the six-year-old girl that he tossed in Muhammad's bed when he was 66 years old. Six-year-old girl, he was 66 years old if he was indeed born in the year of the elephant. This man sacrificed his daughter to Muhammad, Abu Bakr. He is recorded in Ishaq 281 saying, when we called them to the truth, this is a man that sacrificed his daughter to a pedophile, knowingly, willing, in his own home. When we called them to the truth, they turned their backs and howled like bitches. Allah's punishment on them will not tarry. I swear by the Lord of camels that I am no perjurer. Valiant hand will descend upon the Quraysh, which will leave women husbandless. It will leave men dead with vultures wheeling round. It will not spare the infidels. Allah's vengeance never came. It was Muslims, those corrupted by Muhammad's doctrine, that attacked, that left women husbandless, that left men dead, with vultures wheeling all around. And I understand that since they were in Arabia, Allah was indeed the Lord of camels. It is a peculiar thing in the Quran that Allah has a fixation on she-camels. He claims that he obliterated an entire civilization because they hamstrung a thirsty she-camel. He goes on and on to talk about his love affair with she-camels. The only thing that Allah actually coveted more than a she-camel was cows. There's like five surahs named after cows. Oh, he says that cows are good to screw. Excuse me for the youngsters listening here. That cows are good to wear. Cows are good to eat. That his great gift to his people was cows. Over and over again. I don't know if it was the golden calf of Exodus when the people of Israel turned against Yahweh and turned to religion instead, or if it is the sacrifice of the red heifer that will ultimately cleanse the remnant of Israel for Yahweh's return. But nonetheless, Allah had a thing for cows. Now, it is apparent that we are dealing with soaring intellects here and bastions of morality, because the first caliph called his extended family and former neighbors the working men of his hometown, howling bitches. And it is interesting to note that the man who sacrificed his six-year-old daughter to the sexual decadence of Allah's Rasuli, his messenger, to retain his special place in this death cult that had become now a criminal enterprise, was also a messenger, calling the howling bitches into submission so that they could join his gang. As we continue to plumb the depths of Islamic self-incrimination, since Allah's punishment on them never came, but in fact tarried past the point of that Petra was abandoned, actually, 1,300 years ago, the failure to deliver on the threat of the Day of Doom proves that Muhammad was a false prophet and that Allah was an inept fraud. It is the number one prophecy in the Quran. And it never materialized, and it never will. We have long recognized that Allah had a peculiar, unhealthy affinity for camels and cows. However, did anyone expect that Muhammad's gang leader, who grew up in the town where the fractured stone was stacked among the other gods and goddesses, would refer to the voice of the Quran as the Lord of Camels? Not only that, he was swearing by him. So it wasn't a pejorative, but instead a compliment. And of course, Muslims can rely on this demotion of their Lord because Abu Bakr said that he was no perjurer. And therefore, the man who forced all Arabs into compliance and then led the great subjugation of humankind after Muhammad's death, called Allah the Lord of Camels. It is rare to find men bragging about their desire and their commitment to slaughter their former friends and family. But nonetheless, this is what Abu Bakr was anticipating. It is what he was celebrating. As if they were establishing the mafia, the consequence of not capitulating to the Godfather, and I use that term literally, would be death. Should the first caliph have achieved his status ambition, no Muslim would be spared. Responding to this derisive rhetoric, an unbeliever named Slave to Allah, I have a trouble with their naming rights, replied, this is in Ishaq 282. Does your eye weep incessantly over the ruins of a dwelling that shifting sands have now obscured? Is your army and declaration of war firm enough that we should abandon images venerated in Mecca, passed on to heirs by a noble ancestor? Are your steeds panting at the fray? Are your swords polished white? Are they in the hands of warriors, dangerous as lions? Or are you just conceited? Are you here to quench your thirst for vengeance? Nay, they withdraw in great fear and awe. Ah, but they would return. And when they returned, they would attack a much smaller group of businessmen with a much larger group of jihadists. And they would succeed the next time by being sadistic, by being murderous. But isn't it interesting that this man, who, of course, grew up listening to Muhammad's rants, knew of the declaration of war, the Pledge of Aqaba, the pledge to wage war against all mankind that began the Islamic era that had transpired coterminously with the Hijra out of Petra into Yathrib. He knew that the religion of Islam was based on Qusay, who was generations before Muhammad, and that Muhammad simply copied and pasted all of Qusay's rituals, every ritual, from the Hajj to circumambulating the Kaaba to the Kaaba itself, is a ritual established in pagan religions by Muhammad's predecessors. Even the month of Ramadan, the prostration prayer, all of it is pagan. But he knew, this man who knew Muhammad best, that their swords were polished white, and that they were dangerous, and that they were conceited. Recognizing the ravaged condition of Petra at this time, Mecca didn't even exist at this time, by this period, and knowing that it would soon be abandoned, realizing that Mecca did not yet exist and that the Kaaba was a rock pile housing rock gods, it was obvious that Muhammad was pining over the ruins of a dwelling that shifting sands obscure. However, it is surprising to see this admission in their scriptures. This is the heart of the Islamic religion. It is also worth noting that Petra was obscured for 12 centuries under the shifting sands, but such was not the case with Mecca. Once the Kaaba was relocated, necessitating the change of Qibla, direction of prayer, it had been rebuilt and draped over, but never obscured. The Quraysh Muslims, or Quraysh merchants, I should say, were aware that the world was going to witness a religion that was based on a declaration of war. The first Muslims were a gang of hoodlums. The business of Islam was armed robbery. And these are irrefutable facts. Further, the slave to Allah affirmed that the actual founder of the pagan shrine and the polytheistic religious rites that were incorporated into Islam, Qusay, was a noble ancestor. In this context, he was insinuating that since Muhammad stole their religion, Muhammad was a fraud. Judaism is identified with a star, and Christianity spread under the sign of a cross. By contrast, Islam metastasized under the swords that were polished white, in the hands of warriors dangerous as lions. Although that comparison wasn't fair, since lions did not kill for their amusement, to spread their religion, or to plunder their neighbors. Lions are not savages. Conceit is what drove both the ungod and his nonprofit. Without Satan's protestation that he was God, without Muhammad's insistence that he be obeyed, venerated, immortalized, and enriched, there is no Quran. There is no Islam. Had the Quraysh robbed the first Muslims Had they murdered and enslaved members of Muhammad's menacing gang, vengeance would have been appropriate. But since the opposite is true, and all of the Quraysh had done up to this point was to denounce Muhammad's confiscation of their religion, there was no justification for the Islamic retaliation. We'll pause here, and we'll pick up this story at another time. This has been the Iowa Blog, and I'm your host, Craig Wynn. Thank you for listening.